This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. What if there were a billion of us? Writer and podcast host Matthew Iglesias suggests that that would be a positive development for the country in his new book, 1 Billion Americans, The Case for Thinking Bigger. Iglesias argues that amid this COVID-19 pandemic, we've witnessed the U.S. lose the will and means to lead the global community and marketplace. Among the arguments he makes in 1 Billion Americans, Iglesias says that America should take its decline seriously, particularly as it faces stiffer competition from China and India. Matthew Iglesias joined Cincinnati Edition earlier to talk about the new book. Matthew, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
I'm really glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you. It's a very interesting proposal. I mean, you know, it's a tough place to be right now, America, with how polarized it is. And you're making an argument that there should be more of us. So I was a little bit scared, actually, opening up the first page. But you do open this book stating that China and India have more people than the U.S. and they're possibly on pace to surpass America as the world's great power. What's concerning about that? Is it more than just pride?
Pride counts for something in the world, and I think we should take that seriously. But, you know, you look at what's going on in China these days, right? We hoped, and I believed back in the late 1990s, that economic integration with China and economic growth in China would foster democratization and liberalization there, that American values would be exported along with economic interconnections. It has not worked out that way. China has become more repressive domestically, more of a personalized dictatorship in the person of President Xi. They have broken their international agreements, their guarantees of Hong Kong's rights and democracy and sovereignty there. They've moved aggressively into the South China Sea. They've established concentration camps in Xinjiang that they have Uyghurs in. I read earlier this week a story that they consider those camps to be such a success story that they're going to start doing it in Tibet as well. Now, what's happened in the United States during this time? We had an NBA coach be reprimanded by his teammates and by the whole league for tweeting in support of Hong Kong. We have had, there was a great Pen America report about this a few weeks ago. We have had Hollywood movie studios submitting their movies to Chinese censorship, not just for release in China, but because the Chinese domestic market for box office is now bigger than ours globally. It's PRC censors who decide what can be in our movies. We had an executive at Mercedes-Benz need to apologize for quoting the Dalai Lama at a corporate event. So how bad does it get in a world where China is the number one economy? I don't know, you know, but it's not good. They have a value system that is not ours. They are very aggressive about promoting it. And we should try to do something about it. And I don't think we should, like, have a war, right? Like, we shouldn't do something crazy. But we should tend our own garden. So you talked about the polarization in the United States. You know, this worries me. I think it worries a lot of people. Part of what I liked about this book, part of what I think people who have enjoyed reading the book like about it, is this is an optimistic book about what unites us as Americans, values that we can agree on, and then looks at practical issues that are posed by the question of population growth. How do we get it? How do we improve our immigration system? How do we do more to support families? How do we make sure there's housing for people? How do we revitalize cities in the interior? How do we support our infrastructure? And how do we work together as Americans on a common goal? Because that's what we've done in the best moments in our history. And right now, we fight, we yell, and we fight, and we fight, and we fight. And it's making everybody miserable, and it's eroding our standing in the world. I mean, we are not making America great again right now. We're talking about greatness, but we're shrinking.
And we're talking with Matthew Iglesias, the author of the new book, 1 Billion Americans, The Case for Thinking Bigger. And Matthew, as far as polarization goes, I mean, the very first line in your introduction suggests that the current American political system is in the condition it is because of Americans' lack of a shared sense of purpose. And so you're talking about the polarization just now. And I'm wondering, do you think it's possible to share a purpose more broadly in this country again?
Absolutely is. I mean, I think that it is notable that when we talk about some of these questions, you know, I've been doing a lot of different radio shows. I've been doing a lot of different podcasts talking about this book. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you everyone thinks I'm right about everything or that these ideas are all great. But, you know, when I go on conservative shows, they say, you know what, like, you're right. Like, we need to do something about this China problem. When I go on more progressive shows, you know, people say, like, you're right. Like, we need to think about immigration in a bigger way. We need to think about this as a source of national strength. When you look at even this dispute about, you know, TikTok, when you look at these disputes about Chinese censorship, these are the issues that we actually don't have a stark partisan divide on. What we've got, unfortunately, is demagogues and political entrepreneurs who like to keep picking at the scabs of the culture war. And, you know, who's winning these culture wars? It's our adversaries abroad. We need to think about, you know, what brings Americans together and what can we do? You know, is it possible? I mean, I think it is. Like, we have serious divides in this country, cultural divides, racial divides. But we had big divides, you know, in the 1940s. But we pulled ourselves together. We became more inclusive. We worked together. We fought against a common enemy, and we came out for it stronger for ourselves, and the world was grateful for it. And we need to rise to the occasion again instead of sinking to the level of the most small-minded people in our community.
Well, you talk about China, and we've seen President Trump himself kind of change his tune on China. At the beginning of his term, there was a heavy emphasis on sticking it to China and then building this positive relationship with them. It was something that he would talk about a lot. And then obviously the coronavirus pandemic broke out. It originated in China, and the tune has changed again. And now China is viewed as an enemy through President Trump. And so you see this back and forth on how his own supporters might feel about that country and the relationship we have with it. And I think it's sort of parallel to the differing opinions that the different parties might have on immigration. And immigration plays a big role in this book, 1 Billion Americans. And so you note, Matthew, that conservatives and progressives are wrong when it comes to their respective arguments about either the country being full and not allowing so much immigration on the right, and then particular cities being full and not allowing so much development on the left. Both of those positions are wrong. Could you elaborate a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to challenge people to recognize the benefits of growth in a sort of a modern service economy. So, you know, one part of this looks at housing scarcity in the kind of the big coastal cities, right? So I live in Washington, D.C. I went to college in Boston. I grew up in New York. I was on a show in Bay Area. All of these are places where people are leaving. People are actually fleeing these cities. But it's not that they're bad places to live. It's that they're leaving because they're too expensive. But we know, like, we know how to build townhouses. We know how to build apartment buildings. We just need to let people do it. And we're going to have stronger economies in those places. We're going to have bigger tax bases. We're going to have more services. We're going to have more growth. And you've got another situation. Western Massachusetts, upstate New York, much of Pennsylvania, almost every big Midwestern city has fewer people in it right now than it did at its historical peak. These cities have hurt from deindustrialization, but now they're hurting because they've hurt in the past. They can't maintain the infrastructure, the city services, the cultural amenities that have made these great places to live. If we can bring more immigrants in, we're going to have stronger communities for absolutely everybody there. A lot of people have their intuitions are sort of Malthusian. They think if there's more people around, there's going to be less for me. And the reason people think that way is for most of human history, for tens of thousands of years, that was true because people were hunter-gatherers or they were subsistence farmers. But a modern, diverse service economy doesn't work like that. More people equals more customers for your business. It equals more opportunities for employers and employees to find really good matches. It means higher productivity. It means higher incomes and more prosperity. And I think we see it on some level. When we look at a place like Nashville or a place like Austin that's growing really fast these days, lots of people are moving to those cities. And we look at them, we know that things are going well in places like that, that they can provide generous services to people with moderate taxes, that there's lots of opportunities to open a new business or expand one that's there. And it's actually really good. And we want to have that kind of growth, not just in Austin and Nashville, but in Cincinnati and Cleveland and New York and San Francisco.
And you're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Our guest is Matthew Iglesias. He is the author of 1 Billion Americans, The Case for Thinking Bigger. He's also the host of The Weeds podcast. And Matthew, on that note, you make an interesting argument in this book. You know, all these cities, the ones that you referenced, Cincinnati included, mid-major American cities that have lost population over the past several decades, you know, they want to offer as many incentives as they can for like the next Amazon headquarters. But you suggest that there are agencies within the federal government that could be decentralized from Washington, D.C., which is incredibly expensive for people to live, particularly on standard government salaries. And one particular bureau you mentioned is the Bureau of, I believe, Printing and Engraving. And you say, for example, that could be moved from D.C. to a place like Milwaukee or some other hard-hit city, which could lead to further investment there and offer a higher quality of life for those employees. And I thought this was really interesting, and I want to know if you know why this hasn't been discussed more broadly.
You know, there actually are a couple of bills in Congress looking at this, and I think it's a good idea, right? So, you know, look, some stuff that's in Washington, you really understand why it's in Washington, right? So, like, the top military leaders, they need to be able to consult with the president. So the Pentagon is right across the river in Virginia. Then, you know, other officers need to be near the top brass. So, okay, the Pentagon's there. The State Department is here. Like, that's great. But then you've got, yeah, the Bureau of Printing and Engraving. It's in downtown Washington. Real estate there is very expensive. If you vacated that building, you know, it could be, I don't know, like it could be a hotel. It could be another museum. It'd be fine. If a few people with good jobs left the D.C. area, houses would get a little cheaper, more people would take them. We'd do great here. If you could put those opportunities, I talk about the National Institutes of Health, which is a really big agency, and it employs a lot of scientists. You know, they need a lot of skilled workers. They're in the suburbs in Maryland, in a very expensive area. If that could go to a Midwestern city that has, you know, big hospitals and research, but where houses are cheap, where, you know, there's a lot of parking lots downtown, where you could spur new investment, it could easily be a win-win where living standards would rise in D.C. with a little less pressure on our economy. Living standards for the workforce would rise because they get more affordable housing, and living standards for other people in these Midwestern cities could go up because, you know, they would have more customers, they would have a more stable tax base, things like that. So America has moved agencies in the past. Robert Byrd, the late senator from West Virginia, he got some stuff put in his home state. But we should think about this in a bigger way. We have a good model from military bases. They have a process called BRAC, Base Realignment and Closure, where they get a sort of expert commission to look at the economic and logistical consequences of military-based location decisions. But we should do that with our civilian agencies as well. These are assets.
Part two of the book, 1 Billion Americans, The Case for Thinking Bigger, is titled The Solution. And immigration is offered as a solution, of course, and so is a more natural process, making babies, having more babies, but also creating a culture and society that nurtures families. And I want to read a little piece of what you wrote, Matthew. Quote, "The way to improve typical American families' lives and enhance the nation's long-term prospects for national greatness is both complicated and simple. Start taking family formation seriously as a priority and start treating the cost of raising children as a major consideration in the design of social policy." This seems like it could be complicated. Is there a way to get moving on that more quickly?
You know, we need to do things. Joe Biden has a proposal in his campaign agenda to say we should give $500 a month to all parents of young children. He has this proposed as a kind of a COVID-19 emergency stimulus measure, but it's a good idea for the long term. It will cut child poverty by about 40%, which is a really big deal. Experts, I looked at a study that a conservative researcher named Lyman Stone, a sort of, you know, religious conservative guy, did of this bill. He said that we would get, you know, maybe 0.2, maybe 0.3 extra children per couple over the long term if we did this. Then I think other things that, you know, progressives talk about a lot, about preschool, about aftercare for kids, you know, these are all things that we should do. And we should think about the full range of benefits and talk about some of the things that might appeal more to people who have conservative values, to people who focus a lot on national greatness, who focus on patriotism, who focus on family, and talk about the ways that an expanded welfare state could help people realize their goals in terms of family formation.
Again, we're talking with Matthew Iglesias. He's the author of the new book, 1 Billion Americans. And Matthew, let's just talk about immigration. You note what you call ruthless pragmatism on immigration. The three fundamental facts of immigration policy are as follows. The country needs more people, and immigration is an easy way to get more people. Immigration is beneficial to native-born Americans and extremely beneficial to immigrants, and in general, we should be more welcoming. And third, a very large and politically influential share of the population is much more skeptical of immigration on the merits than it should be. And you write, Matthew, America desperately needs responsible public figures who can navigate the tensions between the second and third points in order to address the first one. So responsible public figures seems like, in this particular moment in American history, could be challenging on its own, much less addressing the large-scale problem of immigration.
It is challenging. But so here's my point, right? I'm a writer. I'm a journalist. I'm a policy analyst. I tell it like it is. So I go through this. I go through studies. We have episodes of fairly uncontrolled migration in the United States. One of them was this Mario boatlift when the Castro regime suddenly let a lot of discontented people flood into Miami. We had recently just a ton of people from Puerto Rico went to Orlando, not immigrants, they're U.S. citizens. There's no limit on their ability to do it. But the hurricane inspired a lot of them to do it. So we can research the economic consequences of these things. And we see that even totally uncontrolled migration is beneficial to most native-born Americans. At the same time, we know politically lots of Americans don't believe that. So, like, what do we need? So I can try to just convince people, right? Immigration is better than you think it is, and we should embrace it. But we need politicians to do smart politics, to find forms of immigration that are politically popular or that can be the basis for compromise. And I know some people look at that passage of the book and they roll their eyes. They're like, what? This guy's saying we need politicians who try to do the right thing and try to be intelligent. But like, yes, right? I mean, if you look at the Civil War, you look at World War II, you look at the early days of the Republic, like any time there's big challenges in life, you either get through them in part because there are wise and moral leaders, or you just don't get through them. If we accept the idea that American public officials will never try to do the right thing, no matter what, then we're really screwed, so to speak. You know, the Chinese are going to get us if we don't just get ourselves. And I think that we are bigger than that, that we are better than that, and we should look at ways, smart ways, to increase immigration in ways that meet the concerns that people have about that.
Matthew, I know you've got to run, but before you do, I mean, if we triple our population in this country with 1 billion Americans, we're going to have to address a lot of infrastructure issues. You do explore this in your book as it relates to mobility and transportation and, of course, housing. And here in Cincinnati, we are certainly aware of affordable housing crises and mobility challenges. We seem to fight here every week about our downtown streetcar system, for example. We've got a major interstate bridge between the city and Kentucky that is constantly clogged. I mean, if we have 1 billion people in this country, we're going to need a better way to get around. And I know there are proposals or suggestions to do that or to explore doing that. But you really have to get buy-in from a populace that really loves cars. Do you think that's a particular challenge in this country in addressing the transportation needs if we were able to increase our population?
People love cars because cars are very convenient. One problem that we have with cars is that people like them so much and they're so convenient, we get big traffic jams. We know from London, from Oslo, from Singapore, from Stockholm, that you can manage traffic jams by using congestion pricing. No cities in America have done it yet, but New York is going to. Every place it's been tried around the world, it's very controversial. A lot of people get angry when you start it. But once it's in place, people like it because they see the traffic flows more smoothly. It generates a lot of extra revenue. You can use it to, sort of offset and reduce other kinds of taxes that you're paying. Then you have questions about mass transit, people ride mass transit when it's built in a useful way. I'm not an expert in Cincinnati, but I have talked to people, transit planners, about your streetcars. And you know, that system, it just doesn't actually provide very quality, useful service. So a fair amount of money was spent, which is good. I mean, it's good to spend money on better, more sustainable transit infrastructure, but it's got to be fast. It's got to take people to places where they want to go. And unfortunately, a lot of cities invested in streetcar projects of kind of dubious economic viability. I love transportation policy. You know, if I thought I could sell books that was just about bus route planning, I would have done that. But there's a chapter all about transportation if you're interested in it. There's a lot of things we could do. It's a very technical subject. People want it to be just this kind of like big ideas kind of thing, but it exists on the level of brass tacks and has to be addressed that way.
The name of the book is 1 Billion Americans, The Case for Thinking Bigger. It's by Matthew Iglesias, who's also the host of the Weeds podcast. He's been our guest today. Matthew, I enjoyed the book immensely. Thank you for sharing it with us. Good luck with it. And thank you for the time you gave us.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.